We have everyone here, the Youth and Governance is here, everyone here but Supervisor Kohlmeyer, and he apparently just called Supervisor Frederick and told him that he would be here by 7, so we'll see how you write that down in the minutes. He's not excused.
Okay.
So if he's not here. That's our roll call. Approval of the minutes of the previous meeting.
Motion move through.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Frederick, seconded by Supervisor Gens to approve the minutes of the previous meeting. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Approved. Chairman, committee members, supervisors, youth and governance comments. I have none. A couple that I was going to have, I'm sure, are going to be made by the staff here as far as the parks and things. The one thing I did attend, and I know John's going to comment on it, was the stars in the park, or whatever you would call it, out at the Katy Park, and that was very entertaining. So there's a lot of things that our parks department is doing this fall again. Any committee members have any comments or discussion?
I just have a comment, Mr. Chairman. Taking a look at the previous meetings minutes, most pleased to see the detail in the organizational level we have with them, and the competency staff for providing good, accurate meeting minutes. Details appreciated.
Anything else from any supervisors? Youth and governance, anything from either of you? Thank you. We'll move on to citizens' comments. Any citizens that wish to address the committee would have 5 minutes to speak on any topic pertinent to highway, parks, facilities, golf. Any citizens' comments? If not, we'll move on to chapter review of parks and open space plan. Mr. Schilling, everyone should have that in their packet.
So you've got three pieces, the main chapter, an appendix D, and then another two pages that are entitled preliminary plan recommendations were the three pieces that you should have received. So this is chapter four. The first earlier chapters were all inventory information. Now this chapter, as the title indicates, is the objectives, principles, and standards for the park plan, and then using those to develop a needs analysis. The objectives, principles, and standards, you know, were first developed as part of the regional parks plan in 1977, and those were national standards that the committee that was put together then looked at and tweaked for southeastern Wisconsin, and then those standards now have been applied as we've gone along to do various county plan updates, and they've held up pretty well, especially at the county level for the resource-oriented type of facilities that county parks typically provide. We've got, as part of that, there's kind of six basic objectives that we've got on page two there, to provide, you know, sufficient park sites, open space sites, and both resource and non-resource-oriented facilities to serve, you know, the long-term goals, meet the long-term goals for providing recreation facilities throughout the county. As I think we've noted earlier, the county park plan, the county and the state specifically have a responsibility for the provision of the larger resource-oriented parks and resource-oriented recreation facilities such as picnicking, hiking, camping, and that the responsibility for the more intensive neighborhood community-level parks that would provide non-resource-oriented facilities such as ball fields and tennis courts and swimming pools would be put onto the local units of government. In the most cases, for most counties in southeastern Wisconsin, that holds true. Some county parks do have some of those intensive facilities, but they're the more destination-oriented parks where people go for biking, hiking, camping, that type of thing. The exception in Milwaukee County is kind of the exception there, and they provide parks of all shapes and sizes for Milwaukee County. But we did an analysis then for Kenosha County then, based on two things, a per capita analysis and then a service areas analysis. For the per capita, we used the 235,300 person projection for population in Kenosha County. That's the regional number that was developed as part of the regional plan under kind of a best case high growth, not necessarily best case, but a high growth scenario, which is very close to the number, the 229,000 that was developed as part of the Kenosha County Comprehensive Plan. And then we also provide, as part of this, a service area, which is for major parks, for example, is 10 miles for a service radius, and 4 miles for what an urban area would be, which is, in the case of Kenosha County, by definition, would be the city of Kenosha. And we included, to show where the planned urban population is, that's that map, very colorful map that's taken right out of the comprehensive plan, as most recently updated in May of this year. Mm-hmm. That's the newer version, although you'd be hard-pressed probably to tell the difference between the original map. And that's the guideline that we use to show where the urban development is anticipated to occur within Kenosha County. So as indicated, we have the per capita and accessibility standards, the service area standards that we then analyzed for a number of things. And I'll just run, starting on page 4, and bottom of page 4, I'll just kind of walk through those. The first thing we did was analysis for major parks. There are a number, that's major parks are generally 100 acres or larger and provide a variety of facilities. And there's a per capita for acreage and then a service radius. And we did the analysis based on the major parks that exist, Bong Recreation, the one DNR site, and then Brightdale Park, Bristol Woods, Fox River, Petrifying Springs, Silver Lake, and West End parks that are all county parks, as well as James Anderson Park, which is the city of Kenosha major park, and Prairie Springs Park, which is the village of Pleasant Prairie. No additional acreage would be necessary based on the standards. In addition, the 10-mile service radius and 4-mile service radius for Kenosha County on those parks would indicate that everyone in Kenosha County falls within those service radius.
Question. The parks that you've listed here in Kenosha County, I don't see the Kemper Center.
That's not considered a major park because it's less than 100 acres.
Okay, and that's why Paddock Lakes is done.
Correct. Old Settlers not on there either.
Okay, thank you.
So you're in good shape as far as the location, size and location of major parks. Then we go through standards for resource-oriented facilities. And again, those are typically camping, golfing, picnicking, hiking, beach swimming, which are pretty much typically dependent anyway on be associated with a larger resource-oriented park. So we'll just run through those. First one there is campsites. As it indicates there, the standard per capita standard is met by the number of campsites at Bong. In addition, the service radius, in that case, service radius for camping is 25 miles in the county as well. That's everybody's within 25 miles of Bong. We assume in many cases that, in some of these anyway, that some of the demand for camping facilities would be met by existing privately owned campsites. And there the standard fall a little bit short by about 50 campsites when you apply the per capita standard. But I do note there that there is one private campground just south of the border, Fox River Recreation in Illinois, that probably would meet some of that demand. For cases where we're evaluating the private sites, there's really nothing. We're just stating what the standard says, not that the county would say, try and endorse someone to necessarily to have a development of a private campground. Golf courses, lots of golf courses in the county. The standard would say that there should be three, the per capita standard anyway, would say there should be three 18-hole public golf courses. You have two sites, but that they encompass, as I note there, Brightondale is equivalent to 2.5 courses, and Petrified Springs Golf Course. So I'm comfortable with interpreting that the per capita standard is met by those two sites, given the amount of golf holes that they're there. It's equivalent to three and a half golf courses. And then we also applying the 10-mile service radius for 18-hole public golf courses. There's a small area, you know, maybe a swatch about 2 miles wide along the state boundary there that is beyond the service radius, but that does fall within the service radius of 1 9-hole public course that's owned by the city of Kenosha. Going back to our 1977 plan, there was always identified a hole in the service area there for public golf courses. The initial recommendation for a new major park, which now is Prairie Springs Park in the village of Pleasant Prairie, called for that to be not only provide the typical major park facility, but also have an 18-hole golf course. Obviously, got developed without an 18-hole golf course. When we, our staff, we updated and reviewed the standards for East of the Eye as part of the Kenosha Urban Planning District plan that was done 15 years ago, that plan recognized it's still looking for an 18-hole golf course. So the way the current plan is shown, it reflects that there's a potential there for, or there's still a recommendation there for an 18-hole golf course.
Question? Down by the state line, Russell Road, Big Oaks, is that 9 or is that 18?
That's 18. That's
27.
27?
So is this included in your inventory here too, or not?
Well, there's two things that go. It's yes, but that's a private course. Okay. And that's the other question, is that a number of the, almost all the private courses that you have in Kenosha County, and it's interestingly enough, they're kind of lined up along the south except for the Kenosha Country Club. Those are all private courses that are open to the public.
Yeah, okay.
I would not be uncomfortable with this committee determining that, given the location of 190 public course and the other private courses open to the public, then for all practical purposes, the standard's met for Kenosha County.
Conceivably. Just want to clarify. Go
okay.
Carry on.
Picnic thing, we do the same thing. It's in the standard relates, there's two standards there. One relates directly to the major parks, and one kind of, you know, we look at the picnicking overall also, but we focus on the major parks, and the number of the major parks all provide it. In fact, I think all eight major parks provide picnicking facilities. The standard relates to per capita on picnic tables, then you apply the standard. That was, as we say there, there'd be a need for approximately 40 more additional picnic tables at major parks, which is not much. And we'll talk a little bit later about what the old plan called for and what this plan would call for is with respect to meeting that additional need. But the standard says there'd be 40 more, and everyone's within 10 miles of within the service radius, so the service radius for picnicking at major parks is met by the existing facilities. Swimming beaches, lots of publicly and privately owned. I laundry list where all the publicly owned inland, we have two different standards. There's inland and there's Lake Michigan, but the Lake Michigan one is really intended to apply on the regional level, so we don't specifically apply that to the counties, although you got about 11,250 linear feet of beach on Lake Michigan, which is certainly a nice thing to have. But we have laundry list there, all of the beaches that, public beaches. Bottom line is that you more than meet the standard per capita and service area radius for picnic linear feet of beaches at publicly owned beaches. And there's a shortfall of about 1,600 linear feet of privately owned. But if you combine the standard for public beaches and private beaches on inland, the county meets the total standard. So I've interpreted there that the county should be considered to be well served. Again, it'd be difficult to accommodate more privately owned beaches unless someone really develops some kind of lakeshore development. So I felt that the total is the standard total beaches, public and non-public, would be 4,200 linear feet total, and there's 4,300 linear feet that exist currently in the county. So I interpreted that to say that the county's in good shape there. Thank you. Trails, I'm continuing on page 7. Trail facilities, the standards look at linear trails, recreation corridors that are at least 15 miles in length. County has an existing trail the Kenosha County Trail. But that trail by itself does not meet the per capita standard or the service radius standard for a trail. So we would continue to recommend the implementation of the long-planned recreation corridors that are reflected in the county comprehensive plan along the Des Plaines, Fox, Pike Rivers, and Pike Creek.
Would the trail out by Parkside be university land, or would that be one that could be listed on for them to do cross-country skiing and walking?
Well, and then as I continue to say that in addition to the trail corridors that would be 15 miles or more in length, then it should be encouraged that there be other trail facilities that might link into those, and there's certainly a lot of those smaller trails that potentially could link into these major recreation corridors. That would be one of those. And the Pike Creek that runs through
Pence?
Yes.
Yeah.
So that obviously runs right through there. The recreation corridor associated with that would be associated with that then.
I want to go back to the beaches. Just going through that list, I don't see the beaches for Powers Lake listed here. There's the Knowles Beach.
The public beaches are?
Yes. And the town of Randall owns a couple beach parcels on Lake Benedict also. So the Knowles Beach is the main beach in the Knowles subdivision. You could check with the town of Randall to get the name of, there's at least one other on Lake Benedict that's owned by the town.
Knowles Beach is on Powers or Benedict? That's on Powers.
Correct. But I would check with the town of Randall because I believe there's two on Lake Benedict.
Okay.
But definitely there's one, and the Knowles Beach is a major beach for Powers Lake.
I'll add those. Or I'll check on and add them appropriately. What we did there was our park and open space inventory identifies facilities at parks, and we looked at the ones that identified public parks that our file indicated had beach facilities, and then sometimes we didn't include the how many linear feet, but it was very easy to look at the zoom in on, especially the Kenosha County. Air photos are really, you can count shingles on those things to go in there and measure them, but I'll look at those parks and we'll be able to.
Yeah, and in Twin Lakes, I don't think you have them all either. Unfortunately for you, there's numerous little beaches that the village owns the property, mm-hmm. and there's designated beaches there. In Twin Lakes, what do you have? Lance Park? Any others?
Twin Lake Beach North. Lance is on the radar now.
Oh, Lance.
Lance is there, okay.
Yep.
That's the... Yeah, we check.
Perhaps it might be helpful for you to state where these beaches are, especially in this section. Because we all know where George Lake North Beach is. We don't know where Raymond W. Hope Beach is. Lake Chamberlain, that speaks for itself. But,
Do you want to put a map in there?
No. Lakeside Park, that could be anywhere in the state or in any 50 states. Lance Park, I know just because I'm from Twin Lakes. But the rest of this is, unless it stays up.
Do you want just to list it what lake it's on, or do you want to... Maybe there's two ways to do this. We could go through this and say these beaches on this lake. And
I would list at least the lake.
Okay. Otherwise, as Todd indicated, we could put a map together and show. I mean, we have a map already in the report that shows where all the park sites are, so it would be not that difficult to have someone pick those out.
I don't think there's a big need for a map, but I think you've missed a lot of the beaches. And a lot of these, unless you're me and knows all the areas out there, no one knows where these are.
Maybe just a chart that says the name of the lake and then the corresponding beaches that are subdivisions of that lake property. That might be a way of doing it.
Could do that too. Have a table that lists the lakes and the beaches. Then you'd easily be able to see if we got them all or not.
Yeah, but it's something better than this. Because this doesn't, this doesn't tell us a whole thing.
And do you consider...
We're going to slow down here. Questions are going to come through the chair. And discussion is going to come through the chair. Okay. This isn't just a discussion. So,
through the chair.
Go ahead.
Lake Andrea, is that listed as private or is would that beach area?
We have that. We have that on this Prairie Springs Park as opposed to the lake.
Okay.
So I think what you need to do is define.
These are all the names. These are all the names of the park facility. Sometimes that's the name of the park. It's a beach. So
yeah, like Lakeside Park, that could be anywhere in 50 states. We need to know where it is.
Okay. All right. I'll add a table then that has maybe has the lake. That would be the way to go, is to have the name of the park and the lake it's on.
And my question to you would be, what statistics or what maps were you looking at, or old names of beaches that you were coming on or using here to come up with these names? To miss something like the Knowles Beach,
well,
that's the only one on Powers Lake. How could you miss that?
Well, we have, like I said, we have our regional park and open space inventory that was updated as well. Periodically updated, but most recently would have been updated as part of the Kenosha County Comprehensive Plan. So I relied on that as our starting point, and then we contacted each individual community then to see have there any been any new parks since then. And that's not to say that maybe that original list wasn't good,
right?
Which is likely to be the case, that maybe the original list was lacking.
I mean, if it means something in this 2035 report or what we're aiming for, then we certainly need to have everything that we've got, especially something that old. Unless Tom Randall didn't respond, maybe they didn't respond.
Well, they didn't. Probably maybe. Were they contacted directly? Because they didn't participate as the comp plan, right?
No, and then that could have been an issue. They weren't.
That could be it, too. They
very
didn't.
Involved. Well, they were invited. They weren't very involved during the comp plan process. It was missed.
Twin Lakes and Randall
was overlooked and
did their own thing, right? As part of the comp plan, Twin Lakes and...
Twin Lakes was in...
They were
in conjunction with Randall.
Okay.
Yeah, because Twin Lakes has multiple beaches.
So when the staff, as part of the comp plan, would have sent them information to review they may have not taken it as serious as the communities that were more directly involved with the comp plan.
Right. But in this plan, we need them involved.
Yes.
So that would mean you guys have to dig a little deeper.
Okay. What we'll probably do is put together, look up the things that you've given us here, and then maybe contact somebody there directly and say, this is what we have.
Yeah, just call Phyllis at the town of Randall and say, how many beaches do you have, Phyllis?
Mm-hmm.
And she'll tell you. Call Dave Cox in the village of Twin Lakes and say, how many beaches do you have, Dave, and he'll tell you.
Well, we'll probably, because it's part of our, we care how many they have, and we want to know where they are, too. So
correct.
We're probably sending them a map to say,
right.
This is what we got. You got anything to add?
Right. Okay, thanks.
Okay. Standard score lake access on page 8. We used to rely on the state's standards identified in the Wisconsin Administrative Code, and then we included a table there that sets forth the requirements and how those individual lakes then match up with the DNR standards. And as we've identified in the table, we list the lakes, Benedict Lake, Bennett Shangri-La, Cross Lake, Dyer Lake, Elizabeth Lake, and Volts Lake don't meet the state standards. In the case of Elizabeth Lake, they do have a public access site, but they don't meet the standard for parking. And there, for that, we relied on the DNR's got, at least we think, a very good website that shows where all the public access sites are, and then we individually looked at those to determine where the parking was, if they had parking, the types of parking, cars and trailers.
Now, how updated are you on this? What was your last information on this?
Well, the DNR website, then, based on reviewing our 2010 aerial photographs.
Because the DNR put in a new launch on Lake Elizabeth last year.
Really?
Maybe they don't have it updated.
It's not on their website.
It's not on their website, and they own the launch. They own all the parking. It's where the old Mad Dan's Resort used to be for people that are around that area. That's a DNR owned.
Okay.
Maybe they didn't put it in enough parking. Yeah. I don't know.
They list the site on, but it's not one with parking at all. But so you're talking about something they haven't reflected on their site yet.
I don't know, but it's their launch.
Okay. Yeah. And then the administrative code also talks about canoe kayak access every 10 miles on major streams. And for that purpose, the major streams in Kenosha are the Des Plaines, Fox, Pike Rivers, and there's a whole slew of sites along the Fox River that people can access. Not so much along the Des Plaines and the Pike. Then we added a section here, or not added, but included a section on other recreational facilities that are the up-and-comers. We haven't really included, we haven't developed any. There's no standards developed for some of these, and they maybe haven't been addressed at the county level or addressed in a limited basis. And whether or not we choose to do anything, and some of these are, I'll say more, they're non-resource-oriented one. That you can put in places without having necessarily a big county park or state park. But we have skate parks. Those are becoming increasingly popular for that type of activity that would take away from curbs and railings at public buildings or shopping centers. But there's one public skate facility in the city at James Anderson Park in the city of Kenosha. Disc golf becoming very popular. We have two public disc golf courses, one at the county's Fox River Park, and then one at University of Wisconsin Parkside. Mountain biking, everyone's looking for some place for mountain biking trails. Some of the DNR facilities allow, the people that do that activity are looking for a challenge, so looking for somewhat rough topography, for where they might be able to do that, whether or not the county is looking at any potential for some type of trail for that, specific to that activity. They don't necessarily work well with other types of trail facilities because they tend to potentially beat the trail up pretty well when they're flying up and over hills and things. And then horseback riding, we hear that all the time too. Big long trail at Bong though, which is miles and miles long there, specific for horseback riding. And there's other trails in some of the other Kettle Moraine properties in Walworth and Waukesha County would be the nearest other public horseback riding trails. Put a little section in there on the Wisconsin, the SCORP, Wisconsin Statewide Comprehensive Outdoor Recreation Plan that they update periodically, about every 5 years. And that's always an interesting, they don't put anything in there that's specific to recommendations for the county, but they do usually include data related to popularity or increasing or decreasing popularity of various outdoor recreation activities, including horseback riding, disc golf, any number of things. So it's a good resource as the plan's implemented over the years to dig out and use as a tool in that respect. And we have standard for open space preservation. There's no real specific per capita or service areas recommendation because the resources are where they are. The rivers and lakes and woods and wetlands are all where they happen to be. But the standard calls for the preservation of primary environmental corridors. In addition to that, they're not specifically addressed with the plan should consider preserving and protecting secondary environmental corridors and isolated natural resource areas. That would be consistent with the comprehensive plan that calls for the preservation of all three of those. Also recommends the protection of natural areas, critical species habitats. Commission had just finished an update to that plan in 2009 that we've incorporated into this plan. Again, consistent with the comprehensive plan. And lastly, prime ag lands. Kind of as an association with other open space lands, that those lands should be consistent with the county's recently completed farmland preservation plan, right?
It's not final. I
mean, but it's really, really close, right?
Yeah.
And in the plan chapter, then, if it is at the point that it is adopted and approved by DADCAP, then we...
Yeah, it's got to be by the end of the year.
The meaningful map, we'd include that in the plan chapter just to show where those prime ag lands have been identified within Kenosha County. And then there's just a summary that we'll adjust if we have to when we add other information and tables to the body of the report. And Appendix D then was the... I think I mentioned that before. That's the detail, everything you ever wanted to know about the standards for both resource and non-resource park sites, both major community and neighborhood parks. And those standards then end up being used as the development of other city, village, town park plans as well. They go down to that level of detail. And that's the end of the chapter. I also included then kind of a reflection on what did the current plan, the 2020 plan, recommend, and what we're thinking as far as preliminary plan recommendations then for this plan. And on the first page, I go through the major parks and other parks. What did the old plan recommend and what do we think the new plan? And as far as existing county parks, start with the easy ones, I'll say that the new plan would still propose for Petrifying Springs, additional trail facilities, which are currently under development. Fox River Park still would recommend a canoe launch. Seems like the recommendation there with respect to camping isn't as strong as it was in the old plan, so we wouldn't continue to carry that forward. Again, the the standard for public campsites is met by bond. And then the West End Park, KD Park, the existing plan, which is amended to include that, also recommended an additional 260 acres to be acquired. And then I kind of laundry list the things that are, I think, being proposed there, which is scaled significantly down from your early plans, which had a full-blown everything there, soccer fields and ball fields, and we're down to more strictly resource-oriented trails, observation decks, boat access, fishing, access roads, restrooms, sustainable living education center, I think is what the proposed sign, right? I think I saw that's what the wording was, that's why I used it. So, but it's basically a center for evaluating sustainable energy, wind, solar, that type of thing, bat research, and then some habitat restoration. No picnicking there? No picnicking proposed there?
You can't have a fire, you can't swim, you can't, no, very little you can do there.
Okay.
I'm just being light with you, but that's what the sign says.
So, so my question there is, did I capture the proposed, and is the 200, now this, none, again, the plan is recommended, doesn't lock you into anything, but it makes you, gives you the maximum flexibility. So if there's still hope to expand that site in additional acres, then we should leave that in there.
I would be up for discussion, but there has always been that thought. So I would certainly think it couldn't hurt to leave that in there.
Right.
And the state has when we initially purchased that land with the state, you know, they had desired that.
Okay.
So.
And the reason I'm trying to be detailed with some of these is we attempt to cost that stuff out so that we can have a capital aspect to this that DNR requires. The Fox River mitigation, we assume there'll be continued acquisition in those lands that are on the news every spring and summer, anytime there's a flood, continue to acquire properties there. Bong, the project area is a little bit bigger than what they have. They continue to acquire land within their project area. Similarly, with the Chewaukee Prairie and New Munster, their project area is bigger than what they own theirs. They continue to acquire lands as they became available.
Yeah. That's a question then, Chewaukee. Does that, when you say continued acquisition, are you including the conservancy in Chewaukee too? Not the DNR?
This is.
Can you keep track of that?
Yes. I mean, the Nature Conservancy has their own project area down there too that will reflect.
Because they buy quite a bit of it besides.
Yep, you know, and then the DNR's got their project area.
Right. You're aware of that too?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Okay. And UW system owns land there too. Everyone's happy there. And that's been a slow process. They acquire, we track that every year, and they acquire a 1.3-acre parcel here and 1.3 acres there. But yes, there's two different project areas going on there. This one refers to the state, but we will take into account the Nature Conservancy project area also, because we will have a land trust component to the plan. Both the Nature Conservancy and the Kenosha Racine Land Trust are the two, I guess, two big players there. And then on the second page, we've got Parkway Recreation. Well, first I say new county park sites. I left that blank. Based on the standards, the only thing that potentially would go there if the county wanted to continue the recommendations for a new site for a golf course. Is really the only thing left in the existing plans with respect to a new site. And it would be in the area of the existing Prairie Springs site. I'm sensing that, in my opinion, I think the county's well served by public courses and private courses open to the public.
I think you just go with what you've got there.
Okay. And we've got the Parkway Recreation Corridors. Kenosha County Trail, and then recreation corridors associated with the Fox River, Des Plaines, Pike River, Pike Creek, Again, those have been reflected in the old park plans as well as in the more recently completed comprehensive plan. And again, there's trails providing additional links that communities develop or that might be developed within individual parks that provide offshoots of those recreation trails, like at Petchakana Springs, for example, that would give a sidebar to anyone who was traveling along some of these major recreation corridors when they go in place. Water trails, we didn't have that in the old plan, but it's been reflected in the comprehensive plan, so we carry that, and it links into especially the Fox. Other counties now are identifying water trails and along Lake Michigan. I think I mentioned earlier that there's a big multi-state effort to identify a water trail along the shore of Lake Michigan that goes essentially all the way from Green Bay all the way around the Horn into Michigan. And the state's been working on the Wisconsin segment of that. They've relied on a lot of the park data that we've developed in the shoreline counties to identify where there might be spots to stop legally for people to stop, and where is their camping, where are their restrooms, where are their good access points that you could park and drag your kayak down there, or the other way, get out from safe havens during bad weather. And that simply will be a line along those water bodies, and then we'd identify where there's existing public sites that are along those water bodies where people might be able to access or take out. It wouldn't necessarily be county parks, it could be town, city, village parks. Natural areas, we take that right out of the natural areas plan. And then the environmental corridors. What happens with the open space element is we develop a grant. This is the open space in Kenosha County, environmental corridors, project areas within DNR, and do a very detailed map that shows which of those are already in public ownership or public interest, the Nature Conservancy, for example, and then identify from, for example, the Natural Areas Plan that would show where there's additional acquisition recommended and by who. Ends up to be quite a colorful map. And that would make the open space element of the basic open space element of the map, the plan. The plan will end up with an open space element and then an outdoor recreation element. But that's what we're thinking will be. We'll go into our preliminary plan chapter and the maps that go with it. A, is there agreement? Let's see what it looks like. Or is there anything else that we've missed that the committee has heard, anything specific to West End Park, for example, that we didn't include or should be taken into consideration?
Right. Any questions from the committee? Any comments?
Mr. Chairman? I see reference in these documents to ski touring, which of course is a cross-country type scheme. Just my own information, I suppose, out of the committee, as that pertains to area parks, specifically Kenosha County Parks, go back to page 5. On top of page 5, just so I'm clear, what do we have for wintertime cross-country activities involved in the parks listed at the top of page 5? Maybe the staff or administration can speak to that.
Right now our trails are open to it. We don't groom trails anymore. We actually borrow our machinery to the University of UW Parkside to groom tracks over on theirs for everybody. I mean, you're welcome to cross-country ski on any trail in Kenosha County Parks at this point, but we no longer are able to groom them ourselves.
Okay. In the inventory chapter, we indicated Silver Lake Park, Fox River Park, Crystal Woods Park, Brightondale, and Petrifying Springs were the ones that accommodated, of the county parks, those are the ones that accommodated cross-country skiing.
So usable just in their natural state.
Yeah. Yeah, so you might have to blaze your own trail, but...
And then just like comment from staff, from you, Dennis, also, take a look at the West End Park. In the condition that the trails are in currently, is that a suitable venue for conceivably cross-country skiing out there?
I would say yes.
I mean, it has some topography change.
Oh, right, it'd be ideal.
It's not extreme, it's good.
It'd be where you'd end up having the, like the state does, beginner, difficult type of thing?
Whatever.
Not that. We used to groom. We have a grooming tool that went behind a snowmobile. And Fox River Park and all around it, and we just didn't get that much activity. And then, so it's been open. People do it in Fox River.
Right.
And people do it in, I'm sure, all the parks.
Yeah, we used to groom in almost all the parks.
Right.
It just is not enough use to warrant it anymore. That's right. A lot of them.
That's my question. Thank you.
I know some parks, when they have events, candlelight skiing or something, then they make an effort to run grooming through there to make a couple trails, and they typically get huge turnouts to those things. When you have an event like that, that they know there'd be a nice trail, and it's always interesting to go at night anyway.
We like to make our citizens work.
Right.
Snowshoeing home.
Any other comments or questions on that? Chapter 4. So what's our next step?
Well, I look for action to approve the chapter as amended, and the preliminary plan recommendations as outlined.
After that, though, what's next?
Then I'll go back and start building the maps to put together the plan chapter, which includes plan, outdoor recreation element and the open space element, as well as implementation, would be the next step to prepare those materials.
Well, in this chapter, I think if anything, we would, with amendments, but I think on those swimming beaches, it's the only thing I noticed that, not that you missed a lot, but maybe a lot of information wasn't given to you, but there's numerous beaches. And I say numerous, I'm, you know, not talking about maybe three or four. I'm not sure in the village of Twin Lakes, so I think there's more than that.
Okay.
And in that swimming beach portion there, we need to know where they are.
Okay. Well, I have a table. I'll bring that table to the next meeting. Or give it to John so he can provide it, so you can...
A table, we want it in verbal, written. Bayview Public Park, where that is.
Okay. Well, I was thinking we'd do a table that would list the lake and the beaches on that lake. Would that do it, or do you want to?
Oh, sure. But you're going to have to do some more digging because you don't have all the beaches.
Right. But I'm thinking that would be pretty easy to look at then if you had the lake and the public beaches that are located on that lake.
Right.
That would be sufficient.
Well, sure, as long as we know where they are. A lot of people don't know where DeWitt Park is. Anybody here know? Except John Rudy?
Don't ask him.
It's not there. No, John knows where it is. Silver Lake? Maybe John didn't even know where.
I drove by it. I've never stopped.
Where's Lubino?
I have no idea. I know of everything Lubino. I'm assuming it's over like on Oyster Lake somewhere.
That's on Broccoli.
Broccoli?
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, that's the information we need in this. Any other questions or comments? If not, do we have a motion to proceed?
I will make such a motion, Mr. Chairman, based upon the willingness of staff administration to present to this committee amendments that include swimming beaches as discussed here previously. And then also clarification on the golf as to some of these courses that in name are private but open to the public, such as we discussed, which was the, what's one of the border down there?
Big Oaks.
Big Oaks. So we have a clarified and leased inventory, and we have a read as to how that should be interpreted. So I'd make that.
Well, I do, just to go back, in the Gulf write-up, I have six, I do say six privately owned courses open to the public, and I list them, and then the two privately owned courses not open to the public, I've got those listed in the text there.
Which page are we on?
Page six. So it says six privately owned courses open to the public, Nipissing, Twin Lakes, Spring Valley, Bristol Oaks, Maple Crest, and then there's two privately owned not open, Kenosha Country Club and the club at Strawberry Creek.
Right, so those are included. And which courses fall into the category then of the Big Oaks?
Yeah, how come I don't have that?
So that was designated as a, you said privately owned course open to the public, is that correct?
Big Oaks. Seven. So that's supposed to be seven, and Big Oaks is supposed to be on there.
Okay. Are there any other courses that we're missing that would fit in the category of that Big Oaks?
Nope, I think that's it. It's supposed to be seven. I just can't count.
Big Oaks isn't listed in the text either, correct?
Right, I'm going to add it there.
So that's going to be added as an amendment? Is that the
Yes, I'll make that edit.
Where's Big Oaks?
The state line, Russell Road.
It's on the same road. Pleasant Prairie, right on the south.
Is it?
I am. I'll second the motion.
So any other amendments?
Just the timing. Would we have the proposed table for the beaches clarification by our next meeting? Is that a reasonable time frame?
Sure. I'll have to see, you know, what's been working pretty well here is I've been coming every other month. I'll have to, putting together the open space element is the tricky part. That takes about a month to do. But I'm going to start tomorrow. But I'm hoping that we'll be able to come back in the morning.
We'll make that amendment.
So it's moved by Supervisor Grady, seconded by Supervisor Frederick to approve this section of the Parks and Open Space Plan with those amendments. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Do the governance? Approved. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Facilities. Next. Old business. You run down that way, or?
Yeah, Franklin.
Franklin. You got the same list we do?
Yes, I do, and I handed out the update for Courthouse Bow and Arrow Restoration Project.
Everybody have that?
Yes.
Okay. So run at it.
Actually, real quick.
You got an extra
one?
Frank,
you got
an extra one?
Yeah, hang on.
We'll share.
Yeah,
I can share.
Why we got that?
Okay. Actually, just to highlight, the work continues and. Last copy too here, but work continues on the courthouse and Molinaro building. Courthouse zones 1 through 7, 10, 11, limestone wall restorations, below the parapet, zone 2, rebuilding of the parapet walls, which actually, except for zone 2, which is in the very front of the courthouse by the colonnade, that will be the last of the parapet work on the courthouse. scaffolding on the west side, Zone 11 and Zone 5 and 8, stair restoration. That's not only the east stair, but the north stair going into the courthouse, off the courthouse. We opened that up. Molinaro building, the limestone work going on in Zones 2, 3, 9, and 13, but the parapet walls are all complete up there, which kind of leads to point C under number 3, where the roof replacement is going to begin on Molinaro next week. So, but altogether, we've lost 13.5 days due to inclement weather, which is getting a little tight on our schedule. So far we're on schedule, but it's getting a little tight, so we're also thinking of some contingencies in case the weather does close in on us early. But knock on wood, hopefully everything progresses. Weather-wise, total employment, we've gone up from 27 to 37 workers. They exhausted the bricklayers out of the Milwaukee Union Hall that specialize in limestone, so that's where we had the increase in Illinois workers, but we have the same amount of Wisconsin workers and Kenosha workers. So, any questions, comments?
Last week we were 9.7 days up.
Yes.
Inclement weather. How did they get up to 13 here with all the dry weather we've had?
That hasn't occurred in the last... We lost one day in the last month, but I was keeping track of all the days that since we started the project. I went back through my notes, and that snowstorm in the beginning of the year, actually, that's where we lost the rest of those additional days. That was in the beginning, before we even started the project, but I wanted to have those included on there.
The starting date was when?
Originally, it was February 1st.
Okay. Any other questions for the panelists? So when we're looking at getting tight, how tight, and what are we looking at for completion?
Well, we're still looking at January 13th, plus a couple of days, but the big thing is getting the tuck point of the mortar work done before we get freezing temperatures.
Right.
That's the big thing. There's other things we can do, but that's kind of that's what we're looking out for.
Well, they know that.
Oh yes,
right. Yeah. So we're not doing things that we don't need to do. They're concentrating on that.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's been the key, is really to focus them, and that's one of the reasons that the employment went up is. Frank's been working with them to push, so they brought in some extra help. They couldn't find any more guys locally that are skilled in that specific kind of restoration, but that's why you saw the Illinois number go up. But we're kind of pushing them because we really want to get the building, the shell, weatherproof, the roof and the wall, the floor, things get really nasty. So.
And then, will the scaffolding go down?
That's the plan, is to get all of that scaffolding work done. Before the end of the year.
Before the end of the year, you're talking January for completion date. The scaffolding would be up until the end, until January.
There might be a few portions of it that it would be.
So it's really once that wall work is done, then the scaffolding can come down.
Right.
Yeah, we don't want it there longer than it has to be.
No.
It detracts from the load.
Horrible.
On Molinaro roof replacement, what's the material and methodology for that one? Can you just refresh our memories?
You know what? I've got it back in the office.
Or just by memory from what you recall.
You know what? There was two different systems that were specified that could be used either or, so that we had some competition in the bidding documents. One was. I'm trying to remember the acronyms for it.
It's not the type that was used on the safety building. It's not the typical kind of type where they put the membrane down and they put some ballast on top of it.
It's actually a system to where we're going to get, and I don't want to throw the number out, but something 10, you can upgrade it to a 20-year warranty, and then at the end of those 20 years, or something to that effect, and I might not have it exactly right, Steve, who's the architect, put this together, kind of specialized in roofing, but also we could have the same company, they come in and watch it being put down, they warrant it then, and say, yeah, we watched this, yeah, it's done the specifications. If that's done right, and we could redo it in 20 years, you know, if they come back in, and it's just putting, cleaning it off, putting another layer on it, I'm probably saying this too simplistically, but then it'll be warrantied for another thing. So it's a roof that, it's a system that doesn't have to be completely torn off and redone in the future.
I believe that's an Adderall system.
I think so. There you go.
That's the thing.
Because I just put one on.
Yeah, and how did it work? How did it work for you?
Don't have any leaks.
Does this roof
It's working pretty good.
Have a pitch to it, or is this a...
It's pitched.
It is pitched.
In fact, we're adding two additional roof drains on the roof. Because originally, when the roof was designed and pitched, they built it without air conditioning back in the 1920s. We've added these big, massive air conditioning units, and the water had to find its way around to the original drains. And the big problem with the existing leaks that we were having up there was because it was pooling on that side of the opposite side of the drains of the air conditioning units, where it was running off from, let's say, the north side of the roof and had to make its way around. It was puddling there. So eliminating that puddling, we've going to have two additional roof drains put in right on that side. So it is all pitch, but we're also adding additional roof drains, which actually also brings down the amount of concrete we're going to have too.
Okay. That's my question, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, proceed. Parking structure.
Parking structure, I'll take that one, Mr. Chairman. The last meeting, actually the last meeting wasn't here, but we put together the QBS to select a consultant for the last kind of phase two of the parking structure, which is going to be the gate controls, lighting, and security. I coordinated that very closely with the state folks, so we crossed all the T's, dot all the I's. QBS went out, and actually we now, there was four that responded to it, four engineering firms. We've got, Gary and I sat down and did an evaluation of those. Have a recommendation, and then we have to make that recommendation to the state, and then we have to get their approval and work through negotiating a contract with them to get the thing put to bed. Bottom line is, because of all the back and forth kind of bureaucratic stuff we've got to do, we probably won't actually have a contract with them to do it. We're probably in close to December. So it's just extremely... this is my first experience working with these CMAQ projects. Gary works with them all the time, so he's used to it. Man, it's a front, and if you don't cross the T's and dot the I's, you get spanked for it. So I want to make sure we get everything done right.
The state has control of this whole lighting and everything, so that's why we have to do this.
Yeah. Right. So it's moving, but it's moving slowly.
Brookside demo.
That'd be wrong.
The asbestos abatement started on August 8th, and we ran into some additional asbestos, so it looks like it's going to prolong the project by about 2 weeks. We're still in the process of identifying how much unanticipated asbestos was there. We had a little bit of trouble getting a demo permit from the city, and we weren't able to get the permit until August 26th. We should be okay with that. We're still looking at being done with the project by the end of October. Pretty close on schedule.
Yeah, we were originally hoping to get that whole thing done before school started, but right now it looks like we should be safe. But demo permit delay definitely took some wind out of the sails. Ron's had the guys, they've done salvage work, they've done the abatement work, but they couldn't do any major demo until we got that demo permit. So now that's been freed up, once we get the asbestos issues resolved, we're hoping to start to peel bricks off the building in the next week or two, start to peel out the facade and get that crushed. So That's where that's at.
Oh, it'll be the second semester. You said before school started.
Yeah, this is the second semester.
It's not bad. Any questions on that? We'll go on to the corporation council.
I'll take, Mr. Chairman. The actual bid was advertised and put out on the Kenosha County website on August 31st. We had the contractor walk through last Wednesday on September 7th. The bid opening is tomorrow, September 13th. We're hoping, as long as all the paperwork, the bonding, everything is in place, that we can get them started on September 19th. We're still on schedule to finish up by November 1st, and that corporation council moved in the following week or so after that. It's, again, as we said before, it's a lean budget. You know, it's $50,000, but we should be okay.
So there's people, you open a bid 13th, you call them on the 14th, and they can start on the 19th?
If the bidding and everything is there, I mean, they can come in and start doing some of the demo, some of the ripping off of there's some wallpaper and stuff that needs to be removed. At least give them access. They can start bringing down their tools, their gang boxes, things like that.
I guess what I was getting at is there's people.
Oh, just waiting around.
Waiting around for 40?
Yeah. It's up to the contractor. If we give them access, the sooner they can bring down their tools. And will they actually be able to start on the 19th? It depends if they...
Do we have a start date? Do they have to be there?
We have a finish date they have to finish.
And that's the November 1st?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
If, of course, if they don't show up until, you know, October. It takes them... They're not up there by October 1st, and there's a problem, so...
All right, we'll move on. Register of Deeds, Victim Witness Security.
That one, I wasn't at the last meeting, but I know that this one's come up, I went through the minutes, and I know that there was a request made to put a little bit more detail into it. So basically took the information Frank had put together for the last meeting, really just clarified some things, and I think the report went out in the packet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Beforehand. Really the bottom line on the Register of Deeds, you know, it's arguable whether putting the system in is going to bring a lot of value really to the situation there. I think there's things that we can still do to mitigate any concerns that anybody's got down in that area. But it probably does make sense because that's one of the few buildings that doesn't have any security for the entrances to the building. Even this building, if I remember right, has some security of the parking lot, cambered. I mean, Brookside does, Job Center does. The safety building has all the main entrances covered. Courthouse does.
We had two cameras above the employee entrance.
At the
courthouse.
At the courthouse. Okay, so there isn't anything at KCAB.
No.
So it probably does make sense as part of the entire restoration. It's still in the capital improvement plan for, I think, 2013 or 14. That we look at then that the whole building, you know, consider something then for at least controlling access, not controlling, but at least monitoring access into the buildings. So that's kind of the best recommendation at this point in the game.
We just installed commercial grade at the building I work at, and installation and with two infrared cameras was less than $2,500. So are these price, I'm not sure where the prices came from, or because we went to ADT.
Yeah, you can get kits that are arguably commercial grade. I mean, it's really the optics that drive the price of that stuff, I found out. The infrared just gives you the ability to cover things at night a little bit better. The optics themselves are what drives the price of that equipment. And your ability then to zoom in if you do need, to, depending on what you need to identify, that's really what drives it. But you can get a decent home-grade, light commercial-grade system. Supervisor Grady had sent me a website, and I did some checking with our IT folks and the camera folks that did the work in the safety building. Yeah, you can get really cheap systems. installed, really, especially that was probably wireless, the one you guys had put in, I assume, because then your costs are even less. Depending on your building configuration, the ability to go with wireless may or may not, you know, not all buildings would be conducive. The safety building wireless wouldn't work in there, given the construction. KCAB, maybe it will be in some parts. But that's going to dramatically affect your installation costs, is if you can go wireless or you can't. And like I said, the optics quality is also going to drive it. But you could get something in there for as low as probably $2,500. You'd have limited support, I think. Now, if you had ADT, you're going to have good support with them. But realistically, to put a real commercial grade consistent with kind of the kind of stuff we put in the safety building, it's going to be, you know, $5,000 to $10,000 for that level of equipment. And the number of cameras, it's going to be more than two cameras. And then depending on what kind of installation you go with, as far as if you can get away with wireless in some areas, but you have to go wired in other areas, you know, probably 25. So that was kind of the best guess based on talking with the couple of vendors that we use for that kind of stuff. But you could do it for not a ton of money. Yeah, bottom line, you could.
Anything else on that subject? So that would, what you're saying, you're recommending us, is doing this on at a time that we're looking at the whole building.
The building envelope, yep. Because then we can incorporate, we can cover the two entrances, work into that budget.
And work that into our budget for this fall.
Yep, as part of this. That's for the registered deeds. For the victim witness, really looking at it, given all the pieces of that puzzle, I really don't think, because we don't have manned security in any of the buildings other than the jail proper that's staffed 24/7 that monitors the jail parameters, or perimeters, I should say. They don't even monitor the security system in the safety building that's in the lobby and so forth. They just monitor the jail. Everything else in the county is unmanned and it's recorded and it's used in the event of an incident. It might have some preventive value in that people see cameras and they may be, you know, nervous about doing something that was wrong. But there isn't none of this manned. We just use it to go back and determine what happened for in a given situation. So a victim witness would be no different in that regard. And, you know, taking all that stuff into account, really, and now I didn't talk to, but somebody I talked to today talked with Kathy Keeman, the DA's office manager, I know that's not the technical term, but that's basically. And she said they were comfortable with, I don't know if she spoke for the DA, but she indicated at least that, you know, they're comfortable with the way the victim witness area is set up right now from a security standpoint. So that's kind of the best information we've got on that right now.
Any questions or discussion on that? Supervisor Gray?
Comment? Good, this is the type of information you wanted to see. Basically, if we're going to consider doing something in KCAB, your recommendation would be to look at it in the context of doing it to the entire building, or at least the entrances, and that would be part of the upcoming budget process we go through in November. The victim witness area is lower priority, we're saying, might not really specifically need it, that's what I'm getting from here. And I think that's fine, I mean, that's what we're looking for as a committee. And I had a conversation with Supervisor Elgren just before we started our meeting. And one of the things that we may consider doing as a committee here is to go through and visit some of these remodeled areas. We had taken a look at registered deeds after that remodel. I don't know if other committee members have had a chance to do that. And it would probably be a good idea for us to take a look as a committee, if you're open to it, Supervisor Elgren. The witness protection area. And then at the same time, we could also view the remodeling the corporation council, but that'll be sometime, what, maybe a Tuesday preceding a meeting next month? Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, I was thinking October.
Yeah. So that's to be determined. I don't think we have anything in mind as far as the date goes. One of those two Tuesdays, conceivably, we'd like to.
Yeah, what we could do, instead of having a special meeting there, would be we could hold this meeting in there. If we saw what the schedule was for the one of the conference rooms.
Yeah, that'd be fine. Like the October meeting, have it like in the, I believe there's, we could, down at the KCAB, you're saying?
Right.
Like that, and then we could scoot over to the courthouse and.
Yeah. we work that out, or just check and see if it's, if the, like the second floor classroom room, conference room is open, or any of them there. Anybody, is that okay with their own? There, our next Highway Department meeting was in town.
Oh, on the first Monday of the month.
Right. Only people probably not is me and John.
We'll do a parking ride.
Yeah, we'll take that army truck. Your army truck.
You had your orientation.
Okay, so then we could move on. Exterior doors.
We put an ad in the paper August 19th for the to repair and replace the doors and to redo the concrete approaches for all of the exterior doors at the detention center. The bids are due in. We will open the bids on the 14th. And from there, I anticipate that as early as the following week, we could be started with that project.
Then the isolation plumbing.
The ad went in the paper on September 8th, last Friday. We're going to open the bids on the 6th of October. And they will that's to install isolation valves for both the heating and the domestic water systems.
Any questions? All right, thank you. New business, resolution to ban firearms and weapons in county buildings. Can I do that right?
Sure. We hope that Bernie Vosh would have been out this evening, but he's scheduled to be out of town for some things for a couple weeks, actually. So he walked me through the basics of this, and what I took away from it was that based on State Act Wisconsin 35, unless we as a county take specific action to identify and prohibit concealed carry weapons being permitted in our buildings, then automatically November 1st, people can bring them in. With the exception, I believe, of the courthouse. There may be a specific exemption for the courthouse. So this basically is to identify that all county buildings, you wouldn't be able to carry a concealed weapon or an openly exposed weapon, obviously, into that building without written permission, and it excludes, obviously, law enforcement officers. I saw an email today from somebody in Milwaukee County who's going through this process right now, too, and they were kind of tripping over whether the officers could carry guns in their buildings. It's clear that officers would be able to carry guns in any of the buildings. But that's basically what it is. We learned, the other thing John and I learned in conversations with Bernie was that it doesn't specifically exempt folks from having concealed weapons in the parks, because that's considered a public space. But they can't take the weapons out of concealment, because that does violate our current ordinances, and Bernie's doing additional research into seeing if that needs to be reconciled or not. But that's basically it. This basically would set things in place, once it would be passed by the county board, that we could put signage at all the buildings and let people know before they enter the building, you're not allowed to bring a concealed weapon into the building per the appropriate statute and so forth.
Supervisor Guest had a question before the meeting on why this was a resolution, not an ordinance. But, and Bernie could probably answer that. And the main question was on the what type of procedures used against someone that if they do care, I mean, what is the penalty? What is the penalty?
I don't really answer to that question.
I have another question. You said that the county right now has an ordinance about weapons in the park?
Right. You cannot bring a weapon into the park.
What can be in your car cased? You can't uncase it. That being a bowl or a firearm. So
that's always been.
Yep, that's
okay.
That's listed in every park.
Well, I was curious about what about these dog parks we have now?
Are we going to
put a sign up for them that you can't take a concealed weapon into the dog park?
Well, technically, that would still
be a public
space.
That's an enclosed area.
I would, again, that it's probably a question for Bernie, but I would think that would be considered a public space similar to a park as opposed to a building, having a contained kind of environment.
We have an existing ordinance that says you can't have a firearm uncased in a county park. The dog parks are all in county park. And the county park is all on the side.
Well, then I guess it goes back to my question about what's the penalty? Would it have to be an ordinance in order to carry a penalty with it rather than a resolution?
But a policy resolution is different than a regular resolution also. You know, this is setting policy, so it should cover it.
Yeah, I would think that, I'm not certain, but I would think that the law would state what the, since the law really is what sets the whole thing in motion, that the law would specify what the penalties are for carrying a concealed weapon in violation of that. So I don't know if you're violating this, a piece of the state law, or you're actually violating this piece. You know, that's, I'm not sure. But I'm thinking Bernie did a lot of research on this because it's like everything else. There's so many nuances to it. Once you start peeling back the onion, that the fact that he went with the resolution as opposed to an ordinance, I gotta believe he did the research on what was the appropriate vehicle to use for that.
Well, what this resolution reads is that it provides the owners of property, including municipal governments, may lawfully prevent possession of concealed weapons in their buildings only by posting certain specified signs. So that's all we have to do to cover ourselves.
To put the signs up.
Correct. So I think it's, without knowing the penalty, I think it's still very prudent that we move this forward.
And we can get that, I'm sure, because I think Bernie's supposed to be back next Wednesday. And I don't know when judiciary and law enforcement meets, but I know that that's the next committee this would have to go to. So we could get the information for that, at least by that time. So before it went to the board, it would be, did you have the answer to that question?
We need this to go to the board in October.
Right.
Okay. Any other discussion?
Can we add, because if I was someone who had a concealed weapon, I wouldn't go to the county center, I would go to the sheriff. Would that be an added, or would that throw off this whole resolution if we added, or sheriff?
Again, I don't know the specific legal rationale.
The sheriff doesn't have jurisdiction over county property.
Okay, that's what it is.
Right. County executive does.
Okay.
Any other discussion? Questions? So
I'll make a motion to approve the resolution.
I'll second.
Motion by Supervisor Esposito, second by Supervisor Frederick to approve. We don't have a number on this policy resolution. We'll call it in our minutes here the policy resolution on concealed carry in public buildings for our minutes service here. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Are you ready?
Using government.
Using government. Building report.
Yeah, I put that one together. That was actually requested when we still had the Building Grounds Committee, a follow-up report. Hopefully it was one that everybody packed. But basically what we tried to do is we took, give a little background on the original safety building was 154,000 square feet. The addition we put on was just over 61,000 square feet. Total square footage of the building now is 215,000, with the caveat that the second floor on that three-floor addition is empty. We don't have anything in there other than, you know, minimal environmental to keep things from freezing. But bottom line is we put two heavy energy intensive operations in there in the 911 dispatch center and the county IT center. But we did, there was much discussion in the old Building and Grounds Committee as to what we were going to, how we were going to design that building, if we were going to go for LEED certification, which is the, most people are familiar with that now because it seems like it's in the newspaper every day, but that's basically a full-blown accreditation that you met certain criteria for building efficiency. And what we chose to do when we put the building together was really cherry pick those things of that LEED, because I mean, the LEED certification, there's some things in there that are pretty esoteric, I'm going to say, but they'll get you a plaque on your wall when you're all said and done for a fee. We didn't think that was probably in the best public interest to do that, but by the same token, if we could cherry pick and incorporate those things into the building that really got us good energy savings, we tried to put those in the building. So there's the lights, if there's windows in the office or the conference room that's got natural light coming in, those lights are adjusted automatically to compensate for the natural light coming in through the windows. There was certain kinds of insulation that went in. The windows that were put in were a very high quality, high E factor or low E factor, high insulative factor. There was all kinds of little things that we put into the building to improve the energy efficiency. And it appears there's still actually quite a bit of stuff that we can do to dial stuff in, but it appears that it is working. Because if you consider the building is 40% larger right now, our electric on a unit consumption basis, the kilowatt hours, we are up, but we're only up about 12% in electric for the first 7 months of the year compared to the previous year. And the exterior lighting, we broke that out separate only because there is a separate meter for the exterior lighting. And part of what we did was we changed all the exterior lighting to LED when we did the building. It was part of a grant-funded part of the process. And again, the exterior lighting doesn't use a ton of power, but it does show that the LED are very efficient. If we did have a need for more LEDs, as we're going to look at other parking lots throughout the county, we've got some experiments that we're running right now, there is going to be significant savings in the big picture when we start to put LEDs in our exterior light applications, because this one's bringing about a third savings, about 33% is what we're saving there. The gas therms, interestingly, too, are it's about neck and neck, even though the building's about 40% larger. Now, we haven't had a full heating season. It'll be interesting to see, but I know that we did a lot of things with energy recovery and heat recovery, so we're taking heat generated naturally in the IT room and the radio equipment room, and we're using that to heat parts of the building. So overall, it looks pretty good. Our expense hasn't dropped, at least on the electric side, because the rates went up. I don't remember the exact amount they went up last year. I want to say it was 12%+. So even though we're saving, the number of units didn't go up dramatically, the costs are still up, but we had budgeted for that, so we're okay. Next year, lighting is down on a percentage basis, and the gas is actually down, because natural gas did go down last year on a per unit basis. The other thing that's worth noting is where we had the IT equipment in the courthouse before. Most of that stuff is out of there, but not all of it, so we're still working on clearing the last few pieces of, there's a couple pieces of IT equipment and then some cooling equipment in there, some of which is going to need to be maintained. It's for the courts, basically. But largely, it's been removed. 85% of it's been removed. So there's been a slight decrease in the electrical consumption there, 147,000 kilowatts. That's actually pretty decent, but the actual cost hasn't gone down dramatically. So it appears to be, you know, doing what it's supposed to be doing. And like I say, we're going to work to get this dialed in more, because we've left some money on the table yet as far as dialing in some of the lighting systems and some of the energy recovery systems. So we're going to work to get that dialed in even more, but it's headed in the right direction, it appears.
Any questions or comments?
Just comment, this is something the previous committee wanted to see, was summary at least twice a year, once every 6 months, to see for the money we're investing, are we really getting bang for the buck, are we heading in the right direction? And certainly this, on the face of it, looks very good. I particularly like the exterior lighting broken out, because it's different. You really can't compare apples to oranges when you talk about LEDs. My recommendation for the next report, which would be forthcoming, I would assume now, in January of next year, if you could just break it out in usage per foot squared formerly, usage per foot squared currently for both your electric and gas, that would give us, I think, a good handle on it. But pleased to see this report. That's my comment.
Any other questions or comments? by January, maybe the city will have paid us some rent. We'll actually...
That's okay to print.
That'll help me with the cost.
City pays gas bill.
Any other questions or comments? No, thank you very much. That was very informative. We'll move on to golf. Golf Highway Parks.
Gary was not here.
Oh, that's right. Versus Highway. So.
But I've got, he did put together a piece of wood. I should have even noticed that. Beginning. There's three key points. One has to do with the fairly, it was a fatal accident at the intersection of C and U that I think everybody's aware of. And we had gotten some immediate phone calls, as had the Sheriff's Department. We had a couple left here. About that situation. And Gary had looked into it. There's been a number of accidents there. It's one of those intersections, though, that, it's sporadic. We go long periods of time with no incidents there. He went back, I don't know how many years, but he went back and looked and just to see if there was some trending. There really wasn't. There was just a spike, and then it goes away, and then a spike. So he reviewed the conditions. They didn't note anything. All of the stop signs, everything, visibility, everything appears to be solid. But he thought it wouldn't be wise to install one of those blinker-type stoplights. We had good luck a little further up the road on C when we put the blinker, watch for cars, blind hill kind of a thing. That has really seemed to be effective. So we thought this should at least add another layer of safety by putting this in, and it's a fairly minimal cost. So Gary thought that was definitely a worthwhile thing to pursue, and they're going to get them up in the next few weeks.
For those of you that haven't been on this committee in recent years, we went through an extensive study of Highway C maybe 3 years ago. There was some fatal accidents out there. And again, none having to do with the road. We did do grinding on some of the big sweeping curves where this occurred. More signage. We had traffic studies done by the highway, Sheriff's Department, that showed the average speed was actually below the speed limit on Highway C in that piece of land, that stretch of road. So this stop sign, even though I received a couple loud phone calls, had nothing to do with Highway C, that someone missing a stop sign on Highway U. So it's... is something that we have addressed, and Mr. Sitzel apparently is addressing it again with those flashing stop signs. So you just can't look out for everybody there. We've done everything possible on Highway C.
Thanks, Jim. This I talked to Fred Eckness about this last week at the county board, and I had a constituent that lives in that area. They were concerned about this whole fatality issue. And they considered, well, can we put a four-way stop sign there on CMU? And like Fred said, it's never going to happen. We talked about the study, and like the chairman said, all this is from these people coming out of... What Fred was telling me is you get a lot of Illinois people running on you, and they miss C, and they get off that subdivision, so that they can't go anywhere because it stops. So they whip back around, blow the stop sign, and get nailed, so to speak. So I think the flashing stop sign is a good thing. And we'll have them on, I would assume, northbound and southbound?
Yeah, I believe so, that it's okay. Both north and south, because I believe this latest one was exactly what you described.
That coming. Exactly, that's what he did.
And they headed north, or south, and they went right through it.
And it's most of the problem is going south. Hardly anything going north, that's my understanding. So I'm glad to see that we're at least addressing the issue. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I would agree with Supervisor Wolf.
That's the same.
Thank you. Esposito. And I have family that lives there, plenty of family, who lives right in that little area. And I would agree that conditions do tend to get pretty bad when winter comes around and when Illinois people come through there. In fact, the little turnaround that was just built there, my uncle's house is right down from there. Little turnaround, you got the Illinois people running through there, and it's hard to see that stop sign up at the intersection. So, especially when you got people running fast. And I do like the idea of the blanket stop sign.
Feels scary sometimes at night.
Yeah.
At least you see it. But it gets your attention.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think this was a daytime lane.
Right. Correct. It was the middle of the day. Just unfortunate, tragic situation. So that was the...
Right. Supervisor Underhill, sorry.
Okay.
Are they going to be electrically controlled or by...
Solar.
I assume it's solar, yeah.
Okay.
Typically those are solar now, yeah.
Good.
So the next thing that Gary gave an update on is some of the paving projects. Most recently, they did some work at Pets and at Brightondale, the stuff that was funded through FEMA. We've got, is it all done now, the FEMA stuff at Brightondale? It is? Okay.
Oh, not quite. There's one little section on 15 Global.
Okay. And did some work at Pets as well. They're going to start on the South Bike Trail. I believe they started kind of the prep work today and should be paving by Wednesday. And then the thought is that they're going to just continue moving, get that hole from state line north, basically, through the county, get that whole bike trail completed by the end of the month is the plan at this point. And then they have some cleanup work to do in spring as far as landscaping and kind of feathering in some of this stuff. And the last thing was that Gary met with the highway workers, that would have been last Thursday, and just to go over all the new work rules, kind of the handbook, and overall he felt that, there were some folks obviously still upset visibly and expressed themselves verbally, but Gary felt, in his opinion, the majority of the folks were accepting of the policy and are kind of just ready to move on. There's still some questions about, how exactly we're going to handle the overtime structure and so forth. We're going to work those details out as we get closer into the snowplow season. And as he says, upon completion of the plan, we're defined overtime, call and procedurally developed and described to the affected employees. So we felt the need to formally roll it out that way, and I think it was good that we did it that way. And we'll kind of play it by ear from here, see how it goes. Those are the three big developments that he put in the report for the month.
That's a nice way to put it, visibly and verbally.
Yeah. Gary has a way with words, yeah.
Is that why he's not here this evening?
He actually, just because I think it's worth, he would never mention this, but he's on a European vacation for his 30th wedding anniversary.
Yeah, that's
so
great.
God bless him.
All right. Thank you very much. We'll move on to
Parks. I attached the Pringle Nature Center minutes, and I wanted to talk about the events. I know Supervisor Elderman came out to the star party. We ended up with 14 telescopes out there, about 30 folks from the public. Everyone that came stayed until it started to cloud up a little bit. I mean, those that came were really interested, and all the astronomers were great to talk to. I mean, they're really into their hobby, and it really was fun. There wasn't, out of all the telescopes, there were no two alike. They were computer-driven. They had mechanical clocks on them that moved them with the Earth's rotation. So it was very interesting. Of course, the highlight being they had I don't know if they go to the NASA website or where they go, but they actually had a printout of all the satellites that were going to cross through the sky that night and what time they were going to show up. So they could point out the space station, they could point out French satellites, whichever it was. Of course, everybody thought that was really cool, but it was, if they do want to do it again, so I think if you have the opportunity to come out, it was great. We're done with our After Dark in a Park movies. We averaged about 40 folks at each event. I know one that we got rained out at Silver Lake, I believe, earlier this summer, but for the most part, we did pretty good. We have two events coming up on October 1st, and the flyer for the Fall Wheel Ride wasn't quite complete, so I didn't get it in your packet. But the Fall Wheel Ride is from 10 till noon. Most folks start a little earlier to ride out the pets. But the Oktoberfest, that's the one I don't want you to miss. And Supervisor Underhill's on the committee and working hard on it. But when you look at the flyer I put in your packet, it says polka bands, food, beer, adult games, wiener dog races, a car show, pumpkin painting, face painting, fireworks. They've got everything going out there. The only thing I've heard about these adult games, it's got something to do with driving spikes into logs or something.
Oh, I've done it.
Have you done that? Okay.
What do you call it?
It's like work. There's a, what's the name? Jesus. I'm usually drinking heavy when I do that.
I heard.
Oh, there's a term for it.
I heard the object is to drive it, not spill your beer.
Yeah. You know, beer. And, maybe I'll think of it before I leave. But it's fun.
So the county parks is sort of hosting the grounds. We're going to put up a few tents and help out. But this is mostly put on by Heidi's Bakery, the Kiwanis, and other local merchants out in Paddock Lake and in that area.
I think you have the nail is reversed. I'm trying to remember how that worked. You're hitting the other end of the nail.
I hope you're wearing protective eye.
Yes, I was thinking the
same thing. You're not using the rules, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Sounds good. Are there Heidi contests involved with this?
No.
A bakery story, guys. There's no pie.
No pie.
Fixed. Okay, Kemper Center. We haven't been able to devote a lot of time to that. We have been down there. We were down there, I believe, 2 days last week, trimming up some of the trees. We still have a ton of work to do. I don't even know if we'll have it finished by next spring. We've got so many trees down there that are damaged that still have to come down. Plus, we have all the ruts and the seeding, you know, to repair that one as well. We were waiting to hear from the county's insurance adjuster. We just knowing all the damage that's down there to the buildings, we weren't quite comfortable just bidding it out and getting going. We wanted to make sure that we were going to get confirmation that we were going to be able to just pay our $5,000 deductible and everything else would be covered. And Barnard Banks has heard from him, and I'm not sure what the status is, but as soon as I hear it, I can let this know. Just a heads up, too, we did purchase a 15-foot bat wing mower to mow the bike trails with. We've been mowing it with pretty much an 11-foot turf mower. It's pretty hard on it, and it's pretty slow. So we purchased this bat wing, and it's cut our bike trail mowing time by almost 50%. Plus our travel time, because you just take it out there with a tractor, you know, load the mower, hook a trailer to a pickup, load the mower onto the trailer, chain it down. So that's taking a lot of time out of it, too. The new playground equipment for Area 5 at Pets, well, it got held up in customs. The contractor showed up at 3 o'clock on Sunday afternoon to Pets and dug the footing holes. Today, the truck arrived with the playground equipment. He cemented in all the footings since he had the anchors for the playground equipment. And that's got a place. They're expecting to have that stuff up by the end of the week. But I know they need a crane to put it up. The net itself weighs 1,500 pounds for the one climber. The bike path through Petrifying Springs, I believe, is going out to bid. And that bike path, hiking path through Petrifying Springs should be completed by the end of 2011. The engineer down in planning and development put together the plans for the north and south bike trail paving that the highway department is doing. And that's going on. I know they're gonna start paving Wednesday. They're doing prep work, and then when I talk to Kevin, they're gonna start on that Wednesday. the Petrifying Springs Dam removal engineering and design, the consultant we hired is moving right along. They did an identification of the wetlands, soils, and a conceptual Pike River restoration plan that they submitted to us, and we approved a suitable bridge design to replace that roadway where the dam is. The other thing is we are in the process of approving a scope of services with the design firm that we selected for the Petrifying Springs Road Replacement Project. It'll be coming up in 2012, 2013. It'll probably be more than, once the project starts, it'll probably be more in one phase because of the amount of it. And that's about all I have.
One question, John, the bike path through Petrifying Springs, is that going to be paved or what is that?
That's paved. Yep.
It's paved. Is it existing?
No, there's no bike path.
Right, it's a new bike path.
Yep.
It's going to be paved. Now, last year when we approved this, the new paving machine, and we're doing all our car paths and we're doing the south bike trails, why are we putting this out to bids?
Oh,
go ahead.
Well, from what I, the highway division doesn't have the proper equipment. From what I said, to dig it out and do the.
Yeah, what Gary told me was, because I asked the same question when it was going up a bit, but he said to really, since we're doing that, I won't say more, a lot of it's virgin territory for it to get constructed right. He really didn't feel we were set up appropriately to do the prep work for that trail.
Oh.
So he's the one that said, yeah, we should, we better, to make that right, since the soils are marginal there and everything else, let's have somebody else do that, bid that one out. So that's the only one that I'm aware of that is going out for bid. Everything else is.
Well, now, if these bids come in like they did for our car pass, we could still end up doing it.
Well, yeah. Maybe then we'd split it or something so that the prep work might be done by an outside contractor, but right. That we do the.
Because those bids were too high. That's why we bought this paving.
To do it in-house.
Right. Okay. Any other questions?
Just to follow up, where is that going to run geographically in Pets from where to where?
Where is it going to run? When you come into the park now, right by Area 1, on the bike path from Parkside, Carthage,
Yep. You
will be able to either cross that rock bridge on the west side of Area 1 to the washroom,
okay.
Or it'll follow around past that pavilion, right along the road, and on the north side of the main bridge over the river.
Yeah.
Then you cross there. Then the two trails will come together again over by Area 2,
okay. Washroom.
And then it goes down that existing path that runs in between 2 and 3. It goes around behind Area 3 Pavilion. It cuts across the lawn area. It catches the existing path in between Areas 3 and 4. We're on the south side of the road yet. And follows the river right down to Area 4. It crosses in front of 4. It swings in and heads a little ways out towards the playground and then curves right back to the walk bridge by the dam.
Okay.
And then from there, it swings a little bit in towards number 5 Pavilion, which is that one that sits way back by the woods with a little limestone driveway. Runs down Area 5, cuts around the back of the parking lot, comes back around on the other side, goes in between the road and the playground, swings over to number 5 Washroom, cuts over to the stone bridge, as we call it, and then from there it goes over and by Area 6, and then it's directly across from the bike path now that goes into the north woods.
So quite a fair run.
Pardon?
Quite a fair run.
Yeah.
Quite a
run.
Yep. We'd like to be a little more precise next time.
Rage 4.
You lost me at first sight.
Is it in Kenosha County?
Yeah.
Hey, and you're still in bed. Need any more information?
No, I think I'm quite detailed.
You know, Pets. Usually people are real vague about this. Great. We'll move on to golf.
I have one thing.
Oh.
You're recurring.
Do I have your open helms?
Oh, the open helms.
Kemper.
Did you want to mention that?
I didn't hear you, Mike.
The open house at the observatory, Friday.
Oh, I didn't go to one, so
No, it's coming up.
Oh, it's coming up this Friday, and I'm still not going.
But it's this Friday. Kemper Center has their open up. I think all the supervisors got theirs and that.
Yeah. 5:30
they're going
to. I thought you were saying.
No, I'm sorry.
Was that an email?
That wasn't really a phone.
No.
Yes.
It wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the open house. I think Carthage is actually the Kemper and Carthage are kind of co-hosting it
this Friday.
Yeah, it's from 5 to 9.
What's that, Carthage?
No, it's at Kemper. Yeah, it's at Kemper. They want to serve it up.
Don't shoot.
Yep. Public is Saturday.
Oh, but that
the public.
The public is Saturday, then the private,
Ours is doing it's gonna be fixed.
That's this Friday at 5:30 at Kemper.
Yep, correct. Double check. There's probably something on the Carthage website, but I'm pretty sure it's 5 or 5:30. Yeah. It's this Friday to Wednesday 9, and it's co-hosted by Carthage and Kemper. And it's at Kemper at the observatory. They're going to go up and show you the whiz bang computers and stuff they've installed with the telescope and how everything works.
Yep.
It should be pretty cool, actually.
So, any questions for Mr. Rudy or we will let it go? Thank you, Jeff. Dan?
In August, the golf course hosted more rounds of golf than in any other month in the previous 2 years. You're still behind in sales and rounds due to the poor spring weather and the road construction. Attached is an industry scoreboard. It does show that our area is around 21% down in golf playable hours through the end of July, so that's attached for your review. We are controlling our expenses, though. At this point, we are slightly more profitable than we were last year, even though our revenues and our rounds are down. That's the good news on that. Highway 75 project is mostly complete in front of Brightondale. My opinion, they could open it up between 142 and Kansasville, but there is still barricades at either end of that. Keeping that closed but still open to the golf course. I do feel that the road construction did have a negative impact on our golf, even though, like I say, we had more rounds in August, but I do feel that we would have had even more play this summer if we did not have that road construction. So currently we are running a $29 weekday special and 39 weekends after 11 a.m. to help fill the courses. So hopefully that fall special will kick off and have some more people out there. The Kronos system, the timekeeping system, is working well. We're able to keep track of who's on property and we're able to watch labor. So hopefully that'll help out for the rest of the year, keeping controlling of our expenses. Our new golf communications committee is meeting on Wednesday. I did, on the back of the opening page is the golf course communication. It's the purpose and the committee member profile. We have four members currently that are going to be showing up. This committee we're forming under the advisement of Chairman Molinaro. It's a committee that we hope will bring the positives that we're doing at the golf courses to local businesses, other community members, and bring the word out that of what we're doing. Also, with this committee, we want them to be kind of our eyes and ears on the golf course. If we have any places that they feel that we can improve, make it better in accordance with our mission statement, we want them to bring that to light. So that'll be happening Wednesday at 1 o'clock. As mentioned earlier, the cart pass, we paved 1,535 feet on the Blue Spruce. We paved 3,414 feet on the White Birch and 5,338 feet on the Red Pine. So most of the paving got done on the Red Pine 9, but we did over 2 miles of paving out there. It looks really nice. Definitely an addition to our guest experience. We still have some work to do with filling in and feathering out the sides and planting grass along the sides of the path, but out of the 10 miles of cart path that we have out there, about 40, maybe 45% of the cart paths are paved so far, so and as was mentioned, they did also did the cart path by number 15 tee box at Petrifying Springs that was all broken up, so that really turned out nice. We went to Carthage College a couple days at the end of last month, and we met with the staff, and they are doing a study on the economic impact that the county golf courses have on, you know, Kenosha County and our and for our residents. It really, the meeting was very interesting. It really brought to light, you know, the differences, you know, that we have, you know, and at both golf courses, and how much, you know, their problems or their or solutions are totally different from one another. So I think you'll be very enlightened and find it very interesting once that study comes out at the end of the month. We're supposed to have it by the end of the month.
We plan on having it for next committee meeting.
Yep. And then Thursday is going to be a big day for us. Lori Stanek, who is our assistant superintendent, she went to a seminar that Toro was putting on at Petrifying Springs. And across the country, there was like 100 of these seminars, and they gave away one walking greens mower for every local seminar. But for the entire country, they gave away one riding Toro Greensmaster greens mower. And Lori's name was picked, and we won a $35,000 greens mower. So she's getting that presented to her at 8 o'clock on Thursday morning at Petrifying Springs. You guys are welcome to show up if you'd like to. We're going to have some local news coverage on that. It'll be interesting not only because we won this mower, but also because, you know, she's a female assistant superintendent, which is mostly a male-dominated, you know, industry, so.
I heard the Kenosha News is going to be all over that.
Hope so. Yeah. And then Thursday afternoon, we have the Kenosha County Executive Cup for benefiting our junior golf program, so that should be a lot of fun, too. I think we have about 56 or so players in there right now. We're still looking for a couple more if anybody else wants to play.
Dan, any questions for Dan?
Dan, do you find that, you know, we had such a hot July, when it's really hot, the numbers go down too?
Definitely.
I mean, versus rain and cold.
Yep.
I mean, is that extreme?
Yes, it is. Yeah, we were doing really well the first couple weeks of July, and then all of a sudden July, the last 11 days, we lost all kinds of revenue and rounds to last year because, you know, that heat and that's really, you know, we had a lot of damage on the golf course as far as disease because it's called Pythium, and those hot, humid nights are when that Pythium germinates and kills off all the grass in the fairways. We had enough money in our supply to spray the greens and the tees, so those were protected because this is a disease that has to be, you have to use preventative maintenance, you know, because it's very, very difficult to get it to come back once it's there. But we didn't have enough to spray the 70 acres of fairways at Brightondale, and you could definitely tell, you know, after that hot, humid weather.
So are you getting, like, I would say a rush of early golf, and then by 11 o'clock, boom, and things just die down because it's so hot?
Yeah, even that early morning stuff, when it's forecast, like last Friday, I mean, you know, it rained a little bit, but I mean, just the forecast that it is there, we lost about $5,000 in revenue last Friday to last year because of that threat of rain.
I thought so. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Anything else for Dan? Very nice report.
It's your Golf Course Communications Committee, 1 o'clock p.m. Wednesday. Where is that?
Brightondale.
Yeah.
Just so the other supervisors know too, and I will be co-chairing that committee with Dan. So.
How
are
we going?
Good.
And we serve a wonderful lunch.
No, come a little early. We're there.
We have great lunches, so come a little early.
Yeah. I'll even buy you a burger.
Anything else for Dan? Thank you very much. Any other?
The only other thing I was going to add was I was at a meeting today with Al. It sounds like finance, they're going to start I don't know, maybe they've been doing it every finance committee, because they're going to start doing a forecasting thing now that we're getting close to the end of the year. We wanted to note that for Public Works, although we still anticipate having a deficit in golf, we are anticipating being smaller than last year, and overall in the Public Works umbrella, we still anticipate being able to break even. So we'll be able to cover with surplus, good news here, bad news there, that it still is about break even. It's pretty much right there at this point. And we'll keep you updated on each committee now going towards the end of the year.
Anything else, Rick?
KD Park, gave you a little briefing, Mr. Chairman, and then we're going to have, we're expecting this month to have the conceptual plan kind of bolted together for KD Park, and I'm hoping that we'll be able to get it to the, bring it to the committee in October as well. So there's going to be that Carthage study and this, so those will be probably two pretty interesting things, but I think we can get it covered in the meeting.
And the, also the message last week, the county said it was kind enough to let us have the park open in the fall. Falls every second weekend, so. Still not every weekend, but.
Oh, that's this flyer here.
Yeah, right there. Good. Anybody else? If not, thank you.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Move and second to adjourn, all in the same staff.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay with that? All right.